Hadi bakalım.
Hey, welcome to the Tim Pool Podcast, IRL. This is the USAID edition, and I'm not showing you my hair. That's how we're opening the podcast today.
You know, that's such a funny thing for you to say. You're not showing us your hair.
Not today.
You don't really have any.
It's coming in a little bit.
Is it?
I did not get a chance to shave today, so
well,
we're rocking it this way. I'm going to boil my head for everybody.
Oh, yeah, okay.
It's toasty.
I was like, what?
Yeah.
Anyway. Everybody, welcome back to another episode of Human Reaction. This is our Tuesday edition where it's just David and I.
Just an intimate little environment. Just you and me just chit-chatting.
Just chit-chat.
Yeah.
Yeah. And today we're going to chit-chat about a very, very interesting topic, USAID. It's all over the news. Prior to this week, I don't think anybody except for Mike Benz knew what the hell it was.
And we talked about it a little bit.
But most people other than Mike Benz didn't really know what it was.
Do you remember our Psy thing, our Syria thing?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. We totally were like... Yeah, you know, like we made the connection.
Look, you guys knew what it was, but most other people didn't know.
Anyways, our listeners do.
Thanks for tuning into the show. While you're here, please smash the like button on YouTube and leave us a comment. We want to know, what are your thoughts on Elon Musk kind of just taking the bull by the horns here with the Doge crew and just absolutely tearing the mask off the Scooby-Doo villain that is USAID? Like I said, it's just me and David. We're missing Kyle today, and I think future Tuesday episodes are going to be just the two of us, so it'll be a new format, and we're going to play around with it a little bit. Mm-hmm. And of course, we have a Discord, and it's great fun, and if you haven't been a part of it, links in the description. Check it out. Great conversation, news, memes, all sorts of great stuff. Let's dig into it.
Yeah, so we got this tweet from the Department of State, basically summarizing that, the two senior security officials at USAID that's the Agency for International Development. That's what it stands for. It's not actual aid. It's international development.
As much as the Democrats want you to think, that's all they do.
Yeah. They were placed on administrative leave after defying the Doge. So don't defy the Doge.
Do not defy the Doge.
When they requested access to sensitive data. Now, this led to a standoff where Doge officials were threatened to call U.S. Marshals before ultimately gaining access. Following this, USAID's website was taken offline. The agency's building was closed and employees were instructed to stay home, effectively halting the operations of the organization. Now I've been told, this is brand breaking news, that apparently many USAID employees overseas are being requested back to the States.
Wow.
Yeah. Pretty crazy. Looks pretty serious. So meanwhile, Elon Musk publicly called for USAID's shutdown, sparking criticism from Senate Democrats all over national security concerns.
Well, of course, national security is our number one priority. We have to have our operatives in the field doing the Lord's work on behalf of the United
Giving
States.
Giving away your tax dollars to other people.
Overthrowing governments, funding DEI initiatives. These are really crucial things to national security.
Exactly. So the funny thing about this is, you know, since we started getting USAID funds to propagate our propaganda in the United States, I've completely changed my opinion of them. They're really great. Let me tell you.
They did stipulate that he had to wear a hat on the show in order to get money.
So. Yeah, yeah. Just compete with Tim Pool. That's really what it's all about. Yeah. He's too much Russian disinformation, so we're going to do this. All right. Okay. So I want to put USAID in its context. And another story happened, too, that's going to kind of bounce in throughout this, too, that I probably ought to let you know before I do the context. So Doge basically got access to the U.S. Federal Treasury's federal payment system. That's basically just think of it like the checkbook that the government has. All the payments out of the government go to the U.S. Treasury and then get paid out. That's it. They got access to it and everyone's freaking out. So why is the question? And we do have, a basic guess on why from Elon Musk's tweet here. The first one was that basically someone said, I bet Elon got to D.C., asked where all the money was going, and nobody could answer. So he asked where the payments were made, and it turns out the department does them. Obviously, he's like, great, there, I want to go there.
says,
yeah, exactly. The only way to stop fraud and waste of taxpayer money is to follow the payment flows and pause suspicious transactions for a review, obviously. Naturally, this causes those who have been aiding, abetting, and receiving fraud payments very upset. Too bad.
Yeah. And Elon said something similar when he did the first weekly Doge spaces. He basically said they followed the money and it turned out that USAID was the most suspicious entity. Mm-hmm. So they just followed that track. And of course, they uncovered this rat's nest of corruption that we're finding out all about today. And as the press secretary has come out with, which we'll get into in exactly. just a little bit.
So the background, USAID has, you know, kind of came about during the John F. Kennedy administration in 1961. But it's important to understand like the background of there. Okay. So, and I talk about this a lot, but just to kind of remind everybody, your model of American history is wrong. Probably. You probably think that we had a revolution, we had a civil war, we fought World War II, and then we fought Vietnam, and then today, right? 9/11 happened to today, right? A better way maybe to think about it is like we had a revolution, we had a civil war, and then we had a counter-revolution. And the best way to articulate this is James Burnham's, I think, example of this is the counter-revolution of the managers, where the largely orientated towards a free society defined by a limited government was flipped on its head during the Woodrow Wilson era, kind of before, kind of afterwards. It's kind of vague. We're kind of still living in that era, technically, where this revolution happened that basically said, under FDR especially, that really made the government as it is today, where we have these managers in order to manage society, and then after World War II, manage the world.
Right.
USAID is the latter half of that revolution in managing the world. The creation of the CIA in the 1940s, their development through the 1950s and 60s kind of comes to a head with the creation of 1961 of USAID as a whole of society approach. So the CIA was overthrowing governments and it was working with on the ground actors. So, for example, is the Italy campaign where we work with the mob, where we work with the Roman Catholic Church in order to keep the communists from winning an election cycle. But what if you don't have those assets? How do you create those assets? USAID exists to create those assets out of thin air, to get on the ground and create those assets.
Wasn't it also a factor that the CIA didn't want their direct fingerprints on all these sort of like, you know, coups and things that they were perpetrating around the world? So they wanted to have the NGOs do their bidding and they would fund those NGOs. Wasn't mm-hmm. that kind of part of it as well?
It can act as a cover. So in the as early as the Vietnam War, so like right after its creation, the Church Commission later discovered that there were people who were working as USAID, people who are actually CIA or as a cover. And it was interesting for me this week as I was reading a book about the Kennedy assassination, where a guy who claims to have been an assassin during the Vietnam War, trained by U.S. Special Forces to assassinate people, claims that his job was as to work in Vietnam as a USAID employee to assassinate people in Laos. Laos was meant to be a neutral country. We weren't supposed to be operating in Laos. We now know the CIA was conducting bombing campaigns and dropping Agent Orange all over the place. But at the time, that was very scandalous, right?
Yeah.
So it's often used as a cover and often used in this way. It became more developed after what is called the Bloody Christmas, I want to say. Bloody October. Carter administration comes in, and during his first year, he cuts the CIA budget substantially. And what happened is from that time through the Reagan administration, more of the CIA operations went to NGOs and became subcontractors for the CIA. So the CIA is kind of like the direct impact people, while the more circuitous route was through these NGOs, of which USAID funds a lot of them. So it's important to understand that USAID efforts are in congruence with the State Department. It's supposed to be, right? And that's the question in which DOGE got involved here, because new State Department said, we're not doing this stuff anymore. DOGE comes in and they're still doing that stuff. And they're like, you can't do that stuff anymore. And so they shut the thing down.
Yeah. Wow. And the effort seems to be to reintegrate it into the State Department, which is kind of what they're doing. Marco Rubio is now the acting administrator over USAID in this interim period while they figure out what's going on there, shut down a bunch of the nefarious stuff, and then hopefully maybe preserve or restructure the rest of it in some way.
Right. That's probably what's going to happen, I would suggest. So just to make it super duper duper clear, all right, the way the money works is U.S. taxpayers have money taken at a gun to their face. It goes to USAID. USAID then gives it to a nonprofit like the National Endowment for Democracy, IRI, which is like the Republican side of things, like more energy interest and more like geopolitical energy interest, or NDI, which is more on the kind of left side of things. A really great way to actually visualize this is to use the Romney Obama debate during his second run, Obama's second run.
It'd be 2012?
Yes, correct. So in that debate, there's a point where there's a real famous moment where Obama says Romney's like hitting Obama on how soft he is on Russia. That was IRI type stuff. And Romney was a board member of IRI.
Which is the International Republican Institute?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And then Obama comes back with this, you know, quirky, pithy comeback as like the 80s called. They want their foreign policy back. That is literally visualizing IRR priorities and NDI priorities, right? They have different priorities operating simultaneously, different interests in how they want to influence politics and the whole of society. And whole of society is a really important concept of that. So after NED has it and either gives it to IRI or NDI or gives it to a civil society organization of some part that the State Department is wanting to create or to fund and influence, then they change the hearts and minds situation of people on the ground, or they fill in some civil society gap that it currently exists in that country that they're trying to influence on behalf of the State Department.
What does that look like practically? I know we've talked about this before, but just to reiterate.
So Mike Pence has a really good example of it. We'll dive into that first, because I think that helps set things up really well.
This up, if you're listening right now. In 2021, the U.S. Special Forces perspective under Mark Milley, our chairman of the Joint Chiefs, put out an entire instruction manual for how the U.S. military can work with the State Department and our intelligence services to organize a rental riot to destabilize a country in order to bring them to the negotiating table. They gave an example of a hypothetical West African country where a member of U.S. Special Forces is on a separate mission, driving down a highway, and notices a billboard for Chinese infrastructure investment into a new port in this Western African country. The unit takes note of this billboard on a highway in Western Africa with Chinese symbols on it. They do their own investigation and figure out that this is part of a real estate development project from Chinese investors that, as part of that development project, will have the construction of a Chinese naval port in this West African country, where in theory, China would then be able to project naval influence in the Atlantic Ocean. What the Special Forces Guide calls for is coordination with the State Department, coordination with our intelligence services, coordination with our psychological operations unit to take all of our assets in that West African region. And in that case, what they did is they planned to work with the unions. What they did is they embarked in a social media influence campaign. They would activate all their media assets, all of their civil society institutional assets, and all their union assets to have the union labor pool in that West African country. Well, actually, there was one thing that happened first, is they first then went, in this hypothetical, the State Department sent a delegation to persuade the West African country to forbid the development license to the Chinese developer. And the head of that West African government said, no. Because something was happening in the hypothetical in the next 30 days, there was a time sensitivity to generate an instability event to stop this using time-sensitive emergency. And so the way they generated that was they worked with their union contacts in the region and the media contacts in the region and created this whole social media campaign to inflame the sentiments of the West African labor union workforce who were working for Chinese companies at the time. Because in this hypothetical, the Chinese mining firms and Chinese industry, you know, was employing a lot of these Africans. And it was to destabilize the country, to bring the mines, to bring the factories, to bring all of the Chinese production in the region to a halt, and to put all these Africans out of jobs, and to bring the African government effectively to a standstill. At the same time, in their own Special Forces manual, it called for support from U.S. aid to provide these same striking miners alternative jobs, so that while they were striking from the Chinese labor companies, they were still getting paid by U.S. taxpayers. So they were financially bribed, effectively, to boycott Chinese industry and to devastate their own country's government, create this crisis, and then use the State Department delegation to go back to the negotiating table with the West African government and promise to end the destabilization if the development was halted. And in that hypothetical, the West African government then rejects the license for the real estate development of China, and that is declared as an unalloyed success by the U.S. Special Forces and their partner network in the State Department and intelligence. And this is the way of our diplomacy in 2021.
Yeah, wow. So where USAID comes in that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they would probably also be involved in funding the media organizations that would also put pressure.
Right.
But these are the kind of functions that we're looking at.
So U.S. taxpayers through USAID are basically funding domestic operations in, well, in other countries, right, to destabilize governments, to put people out of work, to try to, you know, put pressure on China, for in this hypothetical example, in order to benefit U.S. foreign interests.
Right.
Wild.
Right. Right. That's the invisible empire. Right. That's the
soft power influence.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. That's the right way to think about it.
Wow.
So why did the administration do it? And we have some interesting comments from the administration, though, which really gets to the heart of the question of why DOGE is there and this justification. So this is the press secretary articulating some of them.
Through USAID over the past several years, these are some of the insane priorities that that organization has been spending money on. $1.5 million to advance DEI in Serbia's workplaces. $70,000 for a production of a DEI musical in Ireland, $47,000 for a transgender opera in Colombia, $32,000 for a transgender comic book in Peru. I don't know about you, but as an American taxpayer, I don't want my dollars going towards this crap, and I know the American people don't either, and that's exactly what Elon Musk has been tasked by President Trump to do, to get the fraud, waste, and abuse out of our federal government. Thank you, guys.
So that seems like kind of a revelation. I mean, and obviously USAID has a pretty huge budget. It's over $40 billion a year, from what I understand. And, you know, maybe the Democrats in their response to this, and it's been furious and frantic, and we'll get to that, have been calling out, oh, like, but these budget items are like small. They're like a couple million dollars here or $20 million there. Yeah. And I'm like, hold on, like those all add up and they're all going to things that obviously directly oppose the interests and priorities of a lot of American citizens.
Well, and what was ever the interest of these things? That's the real interesting question. Like, what is the State Department goal in encouraging these things?
Yeah.
Now, you could look at it just from, and these are just some examples, right? There's also a bunch of other stuff. But if you have a water development, right, like a flooding incident or something like that, and USAID is funding something there, it depends on how jaded you are, right? You could say that as like, well, they're just helping people who are victims of the flood, or they're doing this on behalf of an ability to keep those countries in line, to indebt them to the United States, to place them into a situation where they are under the control of the U.S. security state, right? So if you only look at it as the talking point head of it, it looks like these DEI programs are just silly. But if you think of it about it like, well, maybe encouraging atheism in Nepal for $500,000, which is one of the ones she didn't mention, but have been going around. What's the purpose there? Right. And you can say, well, it's just for the rights of atheists in Nepal. And you're like, is it though?
What do you think?
Could it have something to do with keeping society in Nepal separated, divided, minimally in control of its own, you know, destiny?
Trying to put different religious groups at odds to promote one to counter the other so that there creates division and unrest, similar to how they put people out of work in this hypothetical situation.
Right. And if you take Mike Benz's work seriously, it appears that anytime you know what's really going on, it's never, we're just doing this for, because it's the right thing to do.
Right. There's always an ulterior motive.
Always a State Department motive.
Right. Because why would they, I mean, you can have all the best intentions or all the best, you know, most altruistic thoughts about the people that are in charge of an organization like USAID. Mm-hmm. And maybe there are some good ones, and I don't want to, you know, throw the baby out with the bathwater and say that there aren't. But why would you just altruistically spend taxpayer dollars on, you know, promoting atheism in Nepal just for the purpose of propping up one or maybe a couple religious groups?
Right. And we're saying promoting atheism in Nepal specifically because that's what's on the line item for that.
Right.
It was released publicly.
Yeah.
Whatever the actual effort is really immaterial to the question of what was the strategy there.
Mm-hmm.
And is that strategy actually in the interest of the United States? What are the collateral consequences of that strategy that make things worse?
Yeah.
You know, and that's the unknown, right? We don't know how much of the world's situation is due to this because of their annual budget of somewhere between $40 and $70 billion annual.
Yeah.
And it just think about that. This is, if we just throw around billions like it's no big deal, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
You know, $500,000 in Nepal goes a long ways, bro.
Yeah.
You know, the $1 million or whatever, you know, the $30,000 or $50,000, all those things, and put countries like Brazil and these other areas, those are real, that's real money. And it's your dollars.
Right.
They're taxpayer dollars.
Yeah.
They're not given out of charity. This is the opposite of charity. This is the forced removal of money from peaceful Americans in order to try to socially engineer other countries.
Right.
And do Americans actually want to do that or not?
Well, clearly no.
Well, yeah.
Clearly no, based on the election of Donald Trump, to do things like this, root out the corruption, root out the waste and fraud.
Right. And the other part of that is, and when you look at it too, you look at the more pithy examples like the ESG, DEI stuff. Those are not, I mean pithy, just like they hit the right chords for the moment, right?
Mm-hmm.
The question is like, is Donald Trump going after the agency because of other reasons, like more immediate reasons that are of interest to him? So we have Grok here asking the answer and the answer. What percentage of USAID employees donated to the Democrats in the last election cycle? And it says 97% of the political contributions of USAID employees went to Democrats.
That's pretty overwhelming.
Yeah.
Is that representative of the political makeup of other entities within the federal government, or does that seem pretty high to you?
That seems higher than usual, probably depending on the department.
Because I would imagine, like just off the cuff, that there would be more Democrats generally in government than there would be
amongst the bureaucracy.
Amongst the bureaucracy.
I'll never forget when I was in DC, I had to go to the payment office one time, and this lady literally had a shrine, and I know I mean that like literally, to a Barack Obama sitting behind her.
Really?
When I was getting paid, I was like, interesting.
Nice. Very nonpartisan.
Yeah, exactly. So part of this, too, is how much is hidden in the titling of things that we really don't understand. So, for example, Robbie Starbuck here has a breakdown of a couple different use of taxpayer funds to enrich their friends. Three, highlight USAID expenses. $520 million was spent on ESG consultants. Now, what are they doing? Remembering that in Vietnam, the aid group was actually a CIA agent. So ESG consultant, CIA agent, you know, how many of those are those?
Right.
To what degree they're CIA assets or being deployed strategically on behalf of the State Department. So just ask yourself that question when you see that figure. $1.2 billion given to undisclosed recipients.
Nothing sus about that at all.
Yeah. Well, of course, those are probably classified, right?
Sure, but why?
Yeah.
But why?
$375 million in DEI grants, right? So these are these things that we're talking about when we're saying like a comic book in South America or whatever, or a parade, or what was it, a play in Ireland?
Yeah, $70,000 for a DEI play or musical or something in Ireland.
Yeah. And imagine if you're the Irish and you're from like, why is what? if you're like a like a Catholic,
it's fucking Americans are trying to turn us gay. And maybe they are. Well, I don't know.
Yeah. So some of the other stuff that they've done, and I think this is an important part of it, because it's like the antidote to all the ridiculous lying that's going on about this stuff is really just asking the question, what do they actually do? Who's your daddy and what does he do? Right. So Rand Paul, my daddy, was talking here about the USAID with medical research in China.
Ms. Powers, did USAID fund coronavirus research in Wuhan, China?
We did not fund gain of function research. That's not the
question.
You know.
The question is, did you fund coronavirus research in Wuhan, China?
Before my time, there was the PREDICT program with which you're familiar, which ended in China in 2019.
Now, this is a $200 million program, and the GAO has also identified that some of these grants went directly to the Wuhan Institute of Virology, where there is a suspicion that the lab leak began the pandemic. Has USAID awarded funds to the Academy of Military Medical Sciences in China?
Not to my knowledge, but I'd have to get
back. I think the answer is, once again, yes.
He seems to know the answers to the questions he's asking.
Right. So this is military biomedical research that we are funding in China.
In China. They love me. That's why.
Now, interestingly, so when we banned bioweapons, we made an exception that was for defensive biomedical research. That's where EcoHealth Alliance comes from. That's where all these efforts were to manipulate genomes, to collect and gather viruses from around the world, put them in labs, manipulate their genomes in order to predict where they might go, right? Or is that just a way to create bioweapons?
Seems like a convenient cover for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. So you say it's defensive, but then what you do is non-defensive. So the USAID was the largest U.S. government funder of EcoHealth Alliance. These are the group that we talked about some time ago. They're the ones who went to the NIH and asked for a grant, who wound up going to the Institute for Biology and basically being the lead funders of the coronavirus research stuff there.
Yeah.
So USAID was funding EcoHealth Alliance.
Meaning the CIA effectively was funding coronavirus.
But they have a low confidence of knowing that it came from the Wuhan Institute.
Very low.
Very low.
Didn't they just recently come out and say it actually seems like it was a lab?
Now, when I saw that, and I haven't done the research here, but when I saw that, it looked like a repetition of the very low confidence comment. But maybe something stronger came out. I just didn't check that.
Let me grok it here real quick, because I feel like that was something. So grok says, yes, the CIA did release a statement suggesting that the COVID-19 pandemic was more likely.
Oh.
They've gone from less likely to more likely.
Okay.
More likely only to have originated.
5 years behind.
Yeah.
Of like a couple doctors, you know, on a viral video being like, here's Wuhan. Here's the lab. Here's the market. What's going on here? Do you remember that video?
Yeah. Yeah.
5 years behind. The biggest intelligence agency in the world is like, you know what? Maybe it did come from the
holy shit. Well, I'll be gosh.
I was
darn.
Watching the Daily Show, and Jon Stewart had a great point.
Yeah, I know. I love how he framed it. I'll never forget. He's like, if there was an outbreak of chocolatey goodness somewhere near Hershey, Pennsylvania, you'd never assume in a million years it came from the frickin' chocolate factory.
Yep.
Yeah.
So the other one is Trump's personal vendetta against the IC, which is probably the best thing that's ever happened.
Oh,
American
for sure.
Politics, maybe.
Absolutely.
If all this it goes the way I'm hoping it goes, is apparently the 14. Okay, so Mike Benz, Trump prosecutors were funded by USAID. We're not going to watch the video. Just going to summarize real quick. The push to prosecute Trump by Alvin Bragg, Soros was a minor co-funder. He gave them $10,000. That's it. The $14 million he gave to the parent company, the fiscal sponsor of FJP, which is the Fair and Justice Prosecution, a nonprofit that supports the influence supports and influences progressive prosecutors in the U.S. Well, that ain't shit compared to the $27 million that the USAID gave them. So to be clear, the organization that has been funding progressive prosecutors, their election and influence as they go in the United States, was the government. That then these people then went on to go try to do lawfare against the former president.
That is insane to me. I mean, if there's ever been a damning, statement of how much the government doesn't want Donald Trump to be president, how much they wanted to marginalize and institutionalize him, you know, incarcerate him, this is it.
Mm-hmm.
They were giving money to the organization that was funding liberal prosecutors, of which I guess Alvin Bragg is one who was obviously prosecuting Trump.
Yeah.
Do we know if the other prosecutors in his various cases were funded by this same org?
Yeah, I think that work's been done, and almost all of them have some connection to the progressive prosecution networks that exist. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and like, we focus on George Soros, but I mean, the fact that the USAID behind it, I mean, just imagine, okay, if you're a liberal, imagine for a second, just all your freak out about the Koch network and about like, oh, all the annual budget of the Koch network is like, and their political side is like a couple $100 million a year. Most of that on staff. This is that much for one side, funded not by a private philanthropist and his buddies and a bunch of low level donors too, and a bunch of people all volunteering for it. This is the government picking your side to fund to prosecute the other side.
Yeah. That's insane.
Right. That is, I mean, as much as you might be worried about big government money and politics, USAID is engaging in this in the United States.
It's just, it's kind of mind-boggling. Although it's kind of vindicating and validating, because we've been talking about this for a long time, as have people like Mike Benz and others, just like calling this out. But now to have the proof, to have the receipts for this, is like, it's like the Twitter files.
That's a real opportunity. We get the USAID files on some larger scale. I mean, that's a classification question, and Trump has not been great about classification so far. Not like systematic classification reform, but if we get Kash Patel, he's pretty good on that issue, it seems like. So, you know, he might be, you know, just telling me what I want to hear. But I love those sweet, sweet nothings, you know, like those. It's too good. I mean, because...
Declassify me harder, Dad.
Yeah, because, well, there's just so much opportunity there of so many things that the government does that are black budget we don't understand and don't know what they are. And if we understand those, then we can more clearly engage in an actual, honest dialogue about what our government is doing. And that's kind of necessary in a republic.
David, don't be silly. We don't live in a republic.
Yeah. So the 2014 coup in Ukraine is another big one, as another touch point. Now, just to remind everybody, before this, there was a guy who got elected in Ukraine. He was kind of not anti-Russian.
Yanukovych.
Yeah. It's hard to say that he was even pro-Russian. It's more like he got cast as pro-Russian because he wasn't pro-America enough.
Just like everybody else.
Yeah, wasn't pro-NATO enough. So, therefore, him trying to, you know, create some third way or being too friendly. There was a 2014 coup that is pretty much the launching point of the current hostilities that exist between Russia and NATO and the United States. So, Mike Benz, a summary of USAID's role here.
Zelensky's first month in office, he was given a threat letter, effectively, by the U.S. State Department, where they had something like 70 U.S.-funded NGOs who wrote a letter to Zelensky telling him, ordering him, not to cross the below-listed red lines, or else there will be political instability in your country.
Now, this is in response for what happened.
Okay, so let's pause there. I'm going to pull up the memo on screen. Elections were held on March 31st, 2019. April 2019 is when elections conclude. This red lines memo was issued in May 2019, 1 month after the new elections. Now, the Ukraine Crisis Media Center, guess who funds the Ukraine Crisis Media Center? Who is writing this red lines memo? Again, we present a list of red lines not to be crossed. Should the newly elected president cross these red lines, there will be political instability and you will be smart mobbed, rent-a-rioted out of office. This covers everything Zelensky is allowed to do on security issues for Ukraine, foreign policy issues for Ukraine, economic issues for Ukraine, national identity, language and education and culture issues for Ukraine, media and information policy for Ukraine, government functioning for Ukraine, whether you can take a shit in a public toilet or not in Ukraine. And who is this message coming from? It's coming USAID, from the U.S. State Department,
yep.
The U.S. Embassy, right there in the Capitol, and USAID. The CIA.
So that, if you notice the top left there, Ukraine Crisis Media Center, that was directly funded by the USAID. They also funded the Center for Applied Research. They did programs to train journalists, activists, and digital media strategies, effectively helping to shape international and domestic perceptions of the protests. We're talking about the Maidan protests in this case. They did fact-checking, media literacy initiatives, fact-checking. I mean, come on. I'm like, does this sound familiar?
Sure
this is
does.
2014. And then, yeah. So this is... Now, to keep this in mind. So like trying to visualize the mechanics of influencing a foreign power as small as Ukraine is, right on the border of Russia. There's a president. He's overthrown in a street coup, right? You're put in as president after being a TV actor.
Who played a president.
Yeah. 5 months later, they issue this, like, here are your red lines thing. And it's written as if it's like a recommendation, but coming from the people who funded that thing.
Right. So right. It's like, see what we just did? Pretty cool, huh?
And to be clear, if they
here's
were...
Here's your list of how to do everything we want.
Yeah, remember the African example. Paying people to be protesters, right? And to what degree those people would be classified. Though, if they did direct payments to people for protesting or whatever, that would be classified. But we do know they spent lots and lots of money on this. Millions and millions of dollars.
For sure.
So, I mean, RFK claims billions. So, I mean, I don't know.
Somewhere between millions and billions.
Yeah, millions and billions. So the real question is, if you're that guy that got put into that position, what are you going to do? Well, of course, what you're going to do is you're going to say, stick it to Russia. I'm going to go with the Americans because that's the only way I maintain power. Otherwise, they're going to just coup d'etat me.
Right. Interestingly, though, we did just have a sort of related piece of news that came out this week where Zelensky went on television and said, I've only received like 70 billion of the 160 billion sent to me. Where'd the rest of the money go?
Yeah, I guess those were actually direct arms. Those are like direct arms transfers, what he's talking about.
The remainder?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
so he's only gotten 70 billion in cash.
Yeah, right. The rest were direct arms. And that's like the steel man. I don't know what's going on there. I didn't take a deep enough look, but
I would be curious to see
the receipts on that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The itemized inventory list of those arms and whether or not they were marked up significantly
yeah,
or not.
So the last part of this that I wanted to dive into of what they've done, and this is how it directly affects Americans again, beyond, you know, funding the process, the lawfare against Donald Trump and these things, was the censorship industrial complex. Okay. So if you watch the stuff that's happened around this, the whole of society argument is that you need complete control of the inside and outside of both the government. You can't just do direct government pressure. You also have to have the civil society institutions and the for-profit institutions to create the bottom-up pressure in order to do this. Now, after the election of Donald Trump and Brexit, there's a pivot to, well, democracies are vulnerable to influence from Russia and influence from statewide actors. That's their overt. Their internal dialogue is, we need to make sure that democracy doesn't fail. And while they define democracy isn't what we think of, we think of democracy. So when I say democracy, you think
Democrats.
You think of voting, right? You think of like rule by the people.
Oh, yeah.
We that, the people of these United thing. States of America, right? That's what we think of, right?
Sure.
How they define democracy, and they define this for themselves in their own internal documents, is supportive institutions.
Mm-hmm.
Trusting the experts.
Bureaucracy.
Yeah, right. That's the counter-revolution of the managers. That's in America, but it's international too, right? This third way between communism and laissez-faire, it's everywhere. So that rhymed. That was weird.
Laissez-faire. It's everywhere.
Yeah. So these... The theory of change here is this idea that governments can't censor because of the optics of that, right? You can't just have the government censor speech they don't like directly. Does happen in some countries.
Look like at the UK. Ukraine.
Yeah, like Ukraine. Like Ukraine, very much so, yeah. One of the things he did was ban the Russian language, for example. Ban Russian Orthodox Church, things like that.
Opposition media.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's because those people didn't sufficiently trust the institutions of the Ukrainian government because they were kind of skeptical of it because... Yeah, these reasons. So you can't have government ban that because it would be too direct. So what you do is you have, but and civil society organizations exist or could exist to kind of fill that need, but they don't have assets, right? They're relatively small or weak. So in addressing the threat of misinformation that is attacking your democracy, what you do is to rally people against the anti-democratic forces to create an air of legitimacy and the pushback and the push to censor. And of course, the anti-democratic forces are just populism, right? It's just the AFD party or Le Pen or Donald Trump or Nigel Farage, these kind of figures. To kind of prevent that from rising online, we need to create censorship online in order to fight misinformation. So what you do is you then invest in civil society organizations. And the USAID is all over these areas in these investments. So keeping in mind, like in America specifically, is with the Global Engagement Center and other and CISA and these other organizations in which USAID was all woven into. Internationally is woven through thousands and literally thousands of international NGOs to put pressure on governments to censor and pressure on tech companies to censor from the civil society working up. That's as clear as I can explain that. Was that pretty good?
That makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. But the kids want to know about the video games. Why are video games gay?
And another one domestically is the games. And we have this interesting one here. And this is the USAID funding a specific mobile developer to promote gender equity and improved health through mobile games.
Kids, this is why your games are gay. USAID is the reason why your games are gay.
Well, and notice all the ESG and DEI funding that's going out overseas. How much of that is coming to the United States? We don't really understand. Right. Yeah. And that would be outside the charter of U.S. It's international development. It's not American development. So like just the fact that they are even doing things that are blowing back here or creating investments here, like funding the prosecutors, which is probably has some international funding, too, that are also spending in the United States, which is can be illegal depending on, you know, registering as a foreign agent and stuff like that. Like that should be against the law, right? Like that's especially given the fact that the USAID from the beginning has been taken over by the CIA as a tool of the State Department.
Yes, that's effectively the CIA operating in the United States, which it's not supposed to do.
Which it's not supposed to do. After the Church Commission, there was a reform to very clearly say, even though it was in the spirit of the law before, it became absolutely clear after the Church Commission that the CIA can't do that.
But of course, they don't care. Yeah. I imagine.
Well, I mean, when you're a rogue agency, like literally Trump just put in an EO saying no more DEI bullshit. And they're still writing checks to gay parades and.
But this is
wherever,
I mean,
you know, this is what a pattern doing?
That we've seen, though. I mean, obviously, you know, as these EOs have rolled out and he's said, you know, no more DEI departments, like they've been changing their titles to try to obfuscate DEI, you know, leadership from being fired or, you know, like coming up with all these crafty little ways to like, you know, hide the football, basically. Mm-hmm. And this goes back to his first administration when his generals were lying to him about troop movements in Syria and backchanneling with China. The bureaucracy does what it wants. The military-industrial complex does what it wants. The intelligence agencies do what they want, regardless, it seems, of what the president wants to do and tells them to do through, you know, legal executive orders. Until now, because we have DOGE to actually pull the curtain back and show where the money's actually going.
Yeah, which goes to show you how much the staffing decision really matters there, right? And how much having somebody that is difficult to go after and take down. Elon Musk, you can't like just shame him out of public existence, right?
He owns to be pretty immune to that.
Yeah, right. So, and then that's what the Democrats are trying to do. So they are now engaged in their stand on the Hill. And it is so strange, right? Imagine you're like, you're the Democrats. You just got the worst shellacking for president you've gotten since before FDR.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, Reagan's in there and like he killed it in his reelection term. But other than that, this is one of the biggest populist support for a Republican we've had since FDR, excepting Reagan. And you're like, you know what the hill we're going to die on is? It's not tariffs. Right. It's not stopping, you know, Medicaid expenditures or something like that. It's USAID, god damn it.
And that's like totally the Bart Simpson meme of like, what an interesting thing to say. Like, why are you so interested in this?
Why are you so interested in this? Yeah.
What's going on here, guys?
Exactly. Yeah. And they're trying to make like a moral issue when, and I don't know what, you know, non-engaged, non-political people are seeing about this right now. I mean, it could be very true that they're winning the messaging war here.
You know what they're seeing? It has aid in the name. That means it's for all the good things in the world. And it's obviously very altruistic and Trump is evil. And therefore, we need to be on this.
But cutting foreign aid is relatively popular, right?
Oh,
I mean,
sure.
It doesn't do that bad. And they've lied about Donald Trump so much. It's hard to believe that they're like, oh, I believe you this time, you know, like, yeah. So
well, you have to
crazy.
Think that at very least the component of the electorate that voted for Donald Trump isn't falling for the mainstream media narrative. They know about it now. Mm-hmm. We have alternative media in spades and people are able to get their news other places. So, I mean, with the ratings as low as they are, I'm not like really confident that these press conferences and rallies that are being aired on CNN are like really having a huge impact.
Mm-hmm. That could be true. I don't know what we'll see. We'll see from the public polling data if it can all be reliably understood. I mean, a lot of that's push polling. And we'll see how it kind of plays out over 4 years. I mean, this is very early, man. Any change now has no effect on the next election of a MAGA president or not at this point. So we got a long road to go. So the Democrats have a tough time. What they're going to have to do is trying to position themselves so that they can maybe try to take back the U.S. House of Representatives or the Senate circa 2026. That's their only hope.
Right. Just to try to stall out some of the legislative efforts that take place over the course of the next, the latter 2 years.
Well, or just be seen as we're leading against the man, like the bad guy.
Right.
And to what degree that's going to work. And I'm just very skeptical of. But we have Amy Klobuchar, Senator Amy Klobuchar. Shutting down USAID is not about efficiency. It's about undermining America's global leadership. USAID counters extremism, fights diseases, and creates more markets for U.S. exports. This is reckless and dangerous. Now,
Republicans are just so dangerous. This is what I'm getting from this whole thing. It's kind of sexy, though, to be dangerous.
Yeah, exactly. It's debonair, if you will.
It's like James Bond shit.
I am struggling to this day, and it's so weird.
My political
formation came about at a time when when Democrats were the only people saying, hey, guys, this war in the Middle East was really bad, you know, and here are all the costs, and here's this invisible empire that's out there, and here's how corporations and the State Department collaborate together to, you know, abuse local populations. And now we have... they create more markets for U.S. exports. Like, that's like it's like an objectively good thing. And I'm a free market guy. I want more U.S. exports voluntarily. I don't want it if it requires us to overthrow other governments overseas in order to have some mercantilist empire.
David, overthrowing that government was essential for bringing military manufacturing jobs back to the United States by way of the Ukraine war. Okay, get it through your head. This is good stuff we're doing.
It's stimulus.
It only cost a million lives. Think about how much money our defense contractors made. This is good for the economy. Come on.
Yep. So we have some more Democrats. This is Senator Chris Murphy and his rhetoric.
Fights terrorist groups all across this world, making sure that we address the underlying causes for a retreat to terrorism. USAID chases China all around the world, making sure that China doesn't monopolize contracts for critical minerals and port infrastructure all around the world. It supports freedom fighters everywhere in this world. Up until yesterday, delivering firewood, for instance, to the brave Ukrainian defenders on the Eastern Front.
You want to know who else, what other freedom fighters they support?
Who?
Al-Qaeda.
Sick.
So remember, Verify Psy, right?
Mm-hmm.
When we exposed. They were USAID funded. Think about their role in Syria during this war that's been going on in Syria. Their role is to attack the Assad regime, to legitimate the head choppers that are now getting our weapons and resources to take over the government of Syria.
Who are so grown up, as we've seen.
They're very mature now. Yeah.
Suspended elections.
Right. And abolish their own constitution.
Protecting democracy abroad. That's what this is.
I mean, just think about it. I don't see how Democrats can really cast this as this is only does good things to a public that has literally watched the State Department light the world on fire over and over and over and over again for 20 something years like this.
They're relying on partisan hypnosis. And fortunately, that constituency is shrinking rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
People are way too smart for this shit.
Exactly.
They're waking up to it.
Yeah. I mean, especially the people who watch our podcast.
Absolutely.
Because you know the USAID is a problem. Now, as we're making our case, I don't want people about how awesome we are. The other one is it chases China around the world. I think is an interesting phrasing there.
Yeah, it
kind of dips the hat to the CIA component of it. I mean, it's very similar to the Mike Benz thing we were just using as an example, right? Of China goes into a country and says, hey, do you want this infrastructure thing? We'll build for you. And then what we do is we show up and say, don't do that. You know, like, otherwise we'll put a gay parades or something. I don't know what I'm doing here. Is it a threat? Is that what those are?
Why are you gay?
You know, yeah. Yeah, I mean, just you're literally, then what's interesting here is how it has the freedom fighter terrorist thing too. Right. It's that classic Star Wars thing, right? A good guy that's fighting the government's a freedom fighter.
Oh, yeah.
To the public, to the people who support that government, he's a terrorist.
Right. Yep.
That duality. And to what degree, you know, that our State Department and our foreign policy has been so defined by global hegemony aims that we just sling these things around without any regard to the welfare of the people at that place, like in Syria, like in Ukraine. That, you know, really, I mean, at the end of the day, world leaders are saying, I don't want USAID here. You know, Bukele came out this week. It was like, no, man, this is why we don't take it. It's because this stuff is toxic. This is how they control your country.
Was it Ghana as well? President of Ghana came out and said something similar. He was like, we don't want your money.
Yeah.
We don't want your influence here.
Right.
Go away.
Yeah. And that's a rational decision. That's a good way to get assassinated too, though.
Yeah, for sure. He's about to be smart mobbed and rent-a-rioted.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
In the words of Mike.
I don't imagine Yanukovych was like, yeah, USAID money, but maybe he did. Maybe he just didn't know. And that's just that thing, that hidden empire part of it. The more we can make public and help the public understand this component of U.S. state diplomacy, the better people around the world can leave. And I literally think this. At this point, I'm just consumed too much of everything else. And maybe I'm wrong about something here. Maybe there's some AIDS program in Africa that's good and completely benevolent, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, Bill Gates.
But how much more peaceful will the world be if we just weren't fucking the world up all the time? You know what I mean? You have to ask that after you look at all the history of all this stuff and how constantly it goes back to the 80s and the 90s. We're doing it. There's not a point in history that you can't find that this isn't happening somewhere. And USAID is a big part of it.
They've got their fingerprints all over it.
Yeah. So, for example, Cuba. Let me give you an example, another one, right? Cuba, USAID pulled together and this kind of like merges with the censorship industrial complex thing. It's very interesting. So we're supposed to, pretty much since the Kennedy assassination and after everything with the Cuban Missile Crisis and all the Cuban kind of terrorist activities we were sponsoring against them, they might be good guys. They're freedom fighters. Don't get me wrong. I'm not pro Castro. I'm only saying that the USAID, for example, is still pursuing a regime change operation in Cuba, right? And how much does that just prevent anything from ever changing in Cuba forever and ever and ever, right? If you know that to this day, as of, you know, the year 2025, and this was only a couple of years ago, but that the U.S. operations are still going on. They created a Cuban Twitter called, I'm probably going to mispronounce it, but Zunzuo.
I don't know how to pronounce it.
My
so
Spanish is not.
You're off the hook.
Yeah. Was part of a broader intelligence strategy to use digital platforms for psychological operations and regime destabilization. So basically what they did is they created this Twitter copycat and injected it into Cuban society so that they can get a bunch of users using it to do regular people stuff. Like, here's the meal I had. And then eventually, at the right time, use that to overthrow the Cuban regime.
Works. It works.
Did not work. This case,
usually
the Cubans discovered it and killed it. But once you find that out, once you're caught doing it, and now that the whole world knows because of an intercepted diplomatic cable, what about the people of Cuba? Are they ever going to get out from under this? That's partly on Castro, and absolutely. Castro exists for a reason. Right? But I'm just saying that these operations brought to the light is a very good thing. Ending USAID, even if you're very skeptical about many other things that Donald Trump does, which I'm in that category, so I've got all kinds of beefs, still are sitting there saying, like, this is, I mean, if he can get rid of this, that would be a tremendous value.
For sure.
In my opinion.
For sure.
And it's frustrating to watch progressives bend over backwards in order to try to make this into something bad, even as these are the guys who are actually good on this for decades and decades, actually had a decent point of view on this.
Yeah, but I mean, over that time, they've just been kind of bought into the system, right? I mean, literally bought off by these interests, I imagine. I mean, do we know of any like campaign contributions or funding mechanisms where these things can kind of like come back into their pockets?
That's very possible. U.S. campaign contributions are difficult to fraudulate. I mean, it could happen, but there's a lot of reporting goes on there, and it's very well. I mean, opensecrets.org, anyone can get on there and look at who gets money from where. That said, there's ways of hiding that, I'm sure. You give it to somebody who gives it to somebody, right? Someone receives a payment, and then they do a donation.
You get a DEI consultant contract for somebody. They go do a consultation, but that org also contributes to a campaign.
Yeah, or they buy your art.
Your shit on a canvas?
Yeah, right. Well, that's the Hunter Biden accusation, right? It's just that I have a side gig and I make extra money and then I donate that money to the Democrats.
You go do a very lucrative speaking engagement.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So those are possibilities. I don't have any evidence of that yet. But I mean, through the NGOs, absolutely. I mean, it's totally possible. you know, it's funny, and to what degree international finance, you know, can relate to these NGOs, and the degree to which 501c3s and C4s could be corrupted by this very process, I think that's very real, right? I mean, that's very possible. There are reporting requirements there, but they're far less than the political campaigns.
For sure.
So is that a vector? Is there something to do about that? I don't know. My thing is stop doing USAID. Just stop doing that. Just don't do that anymore. And if people want to donate to AIDS relief in Africa, let them privately donate.
Right. You can buy firewood for Ukrainian freedom fighters.
Yeah. Americans are the most generous people on the planet, period. And there have been many studies about this.
By the numbers?
Yeah, by the numbers. And it's very clear that if we had even more resources, because we weren't being taxed like we are, we didn't have any inflationary pressures that we'd be even more generous if we could. But of course, this wouldn't be controlled by the state. And these people need the state control. They can't raise the money of themselves for their DEI program in Ireland. You know what I mean? They don't want to do that.
Yeah,
they want to use your money for it.
Right. The Ukrainian Crisis Communication Center or whatever is probably not going to be a huge recipient of American generosity. Yeah. Just out of the goodness of their hearts, you know.
Right, exactly. Well, and then it might fund things that the State Department doesn't want.
Yeah, true.
But Americans want, because they would use their own money and volition to actually fund them.
What a wild idea.
Wouldn't that be crazy?
That would be so crazy.
And I don't care. Like that's fine to me. As long as it isn't them funding the overthrow of our government and our country, then we'll be fine. But it's so frustrating to me to watch this stuff play out when it's such an obvious set of lies.
For sure.
So, of course, the left is all over their skis, too. Online, they've revealed some of these Doge employees and released their name publicly. So we have this tweet, X post, whatever. I always say tweet of their ladies. And then Luigi intensifies. Yeah. This suggests they want to assassinate Doge employees for doing their jobs as members, employees of a government agency, duly elected by the, like from a duly elected president, empowering that agency to go do this thing. Now, to be clear, USAID was created by EO. And there's all this rhetoric going around about how it isn't legitimate, but it is.
That it isn't legitimate for Trump to shut it down.
Well, because, yeah, to reform it, to do anything with it.
Right.
Right. But it clearly is, because it was created by an executive order.
By JFK.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's, I don't see any basis for that accusation.
Well, I mean, the basis has to come with some of the legislation that preceded and succeeded it, right? Kind of formalizing the efforts for it to be funded, right?
Yeah, yeah. So before, they basically said, we need to do more international charity with taxpayers or whatever. And, you know, Kennedy signed into law. And then out of that law, decided to consolidate all these efforts that were dispersed over multiple agencies into the USAID. Okay. That, once again, he created that. So just because governments allocated those dollars doesn't mean those dollars need to be spent if they doesn't fit the mission parameters of the State Department, which it still reports to the State Department.
Right.
So like what?
So do you think... with the sort of, well, at very least, significant reduction in size and scope of the USAID, if it is folded into the State Department, wouldn't those funds, which are still controlled and allocated by Congress, just go back to other agencies and still find their way out to these efforts?
Well, yeah, that's really the question, is what does this long term mean? I mean, this makes Marco Rubio probably one of the most powerful direct control over U.S. tax dollars at the State Department lead has ever had. So what's he going to do with that? Is he just going to spend it on other stuff? I think it's likely that the IRI, which is the International Republican Institute, which is the kind of Republican side of these things, will not go bankrupt. But will they bankrupt NED? Maybe.
The National Endowment for Democracy.
Yeah. Will I shed tears on that? No. No. I'm happy with marginal wins.
Yep.
That said, what is the long-term implications of that? Well, the next time there's a Democrat in office, they're going to get rid of the IRI, right? Depending on what IRI does in the meantime, right?
To what degree, I mean, it seems like it could be categorized as a free fall of USAID right now, right? Yeah. Like very quick to tear it down, lock the doors, tell everybody not to show up for work.
Mm-hmm.
How difficult would it be for something like this to be rebuilt under a subsequent administration?
Well, unless there's legal, that's where the code change really matters, right? You have to get a code change to basically say, this is not how we do, you know, international development in the United States anymore.
Yeah.
Right. We're going to place these bounds around it. But the Republicans don't have the votes for that. They need 60 votes in the Senate.
But wouldn't it just take, like, I mean, even just the hiring process to bring back all these bureaucrats, wouldn't it take, say, a Democratic administration a lot of time to, like, rebuild this network that it seems to have just collapsed on itself in the last week?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a fair point. And then if NED goes bankrupt, that's a whole nother layer of that. Like the other NGOs that have been receiving USAID funds and probably highly reliant on them, will have to go get those funds from someplace else, right? And what will that look like? And can they stay alive to be reconnected at another point? That's a good question. I don't know. Yeah. That's a good question. I mean, like, to what degree, like, at minimum, it's a major setback for this. And that's an unqualified good thing to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
But maybe I'm being overly pessimistic. I might need to change my mind about that. But I just can't see it at this particular juncture in which ways it's a downside.
Yeah.
But still, they continually to be like, yeah, they have to frame it like this. They keep doing this. They say, Elon Musk is a billionaire.
Fact.
And he has government contracts.
Fact.
And X wants to do payment systems.
Fact.
Therefore, this is bad. That's the argument.
That's quite
There's
a
conflict
leap.
Of interest. And like, well, has he done anything that conflicts interest? No.
Well, and Jen Psaki also said, USAID fights corruption abroad. And Elon Musk, I could see how that would make him very nervous. Why would that make him nervous?
Is she
implying he's committing crimes overseas?
Yeah, another one. Yeah, there's a whole bunch of them. They're just doing these character assassinations of it. What was it? Breaking Points. Crystal Ball basically said USAID funded ending apartheid in South Africa. And so that's why Elon Musk hates it.
Oh my God.
Really? Applying that he supports apartheid just because he's a white guy from South Africa. And he has highlighted the very real problem of what's going on in South Africa with white landowners being killed by mobs.
That seems like a problem.
That is just rank conspiracy theorizing BS.
Totally.
She also said he was an ANCAP, which was pretty base and awesome. But, you know.
That's tight.
Wins and losses.
I'm surprised she even knows what an ANCAP is, frankly.
Yeah. Well, yeah, me too, actually. But she's smart. I mean, she might recognize as a wide range.
Yeah, but that's just a very niche segment of a niche political ideology.
I know what, anarcho-syndicalism is, even though I'm not an anarcho-syndicalist.
That's fair.
Yeah. So. Anyways, the mobs are still going after. Here's another one, another really great tweet that I thought was interesting. And this is from Andy Ngo, who does great work on exposing leftist radicalism. Hunt them down like a hungry wild dog on meth. The engineers are, and they list out the names.
Akash, Baba,
we don't need to remember.
Anyways.
Yeah, they dox these guys, and then they're claiming that they should kill them.
Wow, really? K Nova writes, would be a real shame if severe physical harm came upon these young bucks.
Yeah. And they were the media coverage was interesting too, because they're like the young people in charge of DOES gutting these organizations. And they're all like 18 to 20 something year old dudes.
Yeah.
I thought, sweet.
Great.
They're unlikely to be jaded. Unlikely to
or corrupted by millions of dollars in payoffs over the course of a 50-year political career.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. They're it's really interesting the group that he pulled together for it. And
finally, we have some representation in government.
Yes.
It's the Doge boys.
The Doge boys.
Well, for all you patriots out there, look out for these dudes.
Well, it was interesting, especially if you compare it to the Obama administration, when they had a campaign staff in critical roles that were very young, relatively young for White House staff. It was celebrated. It just goes to show you how much this is just media manipulation. They just kind of cast it as, oh, they're young, that's bad, when it's someone they don't like. And, oh, look how great it is when it's someone they do.
Yeah.
So,
well, and to be fair, we do the same thing. I mean, I think this is super based. The fact that these young guys are just like absolutely crushing government agencies with just digging into the numbers and digging into the code and getting security clearances and just being like, oh, this is gone. I mean, and granted, these guys aren't doing any of the decision making. They're just reporting what they're finding.
Yep.
And then these decisions are being made at a higher level.
Yep.
So they're not really to blame. They're just a bunch of autists on their computers.
Yes, exactly.
Just reveling in what they love, like pigs and shit, man. Mm-hmm. Just digging into the numbers and the code. I love to see it.
Exactly right. Well, and the leftist response here is so out of proportion to what's going on right now. I mean, it's just, watching that.
The thing is, the left has to find something to grab onto right now. It's like a hurricane force wind is blowing the Democrats away, mm-hmm. and they've grabbed the nearest signpost that they can cling to rally something around, because this deluge of EOs and actions disassembling their entire empire is existential.
Yeah.
I feel like.
Yeah.
And they're just like, we got to get on something like fast.
I get that. I think it's a strategic error though. At the end of the day, I just don't think they win this fight. I mean, it was much better talking about the cost of tariffs. Even then, it's a difficult situation right now. Cause I mean, Donald Trump's very popular and no one's surprised he's doing tariffs.
He talked about it forever.
Yeah. Right. So like,
I mean, and a lot of workers voted for those tariffs, yeah. right? Cause they want protection from cheap overseas goods.
That's yeah. For importers. Yeah. Or for people who are exporters or who deal in domestic economy, mm-hmm. farmers are going to have a rough go. It's going to be really rough if it goes the way it could.
With now, tariffs on our exports going into foreign countries who we've tariffed, who have now tariffed us back.
Yes, yes, in a trade war. And this is what happened last time, too. Right. We had to do a whole bailout of farmers last time. So, you know, buckle up.
Well, farmers just, you know, start raising grass-fed beef
yeah.
and tallow. And the red-pilled community will keep you afloat.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I think we should dig on tariffs on Friday or something like that and talk yeah. about it, because there has been a lot of interesting developments. I was proven, I don't think I ever said it live on the podcast, so maybe I shouldn't claim that, but I always suspected that much of the tariff fight when it came to North America, when it came to Canada and Mexico, had more to do with security interests, and that might have been proven true this week. So yeah. let's dive into that and kind of...
For sure. Because the Mexico and Canada tariffs have not yet gone into effect mm-hmm. because both of those countries came to the table on border deals, and we will dig into that more.
That's right.
In the next episode. All right. Well, do you think that U.S. regime... change psyops will continue as a result of this?
Yes, yes. You Maybe do. I shouldn't have written that out. It was too obvious. But yeah, of course, yes. Well, mostly because I think Donald Trump is an agnostic on this question, right? He's not, he's often cast as this isolationist type figure, all that kind of stuff. I don't believe that for a second.
I mean, I don't either, especially given the breaking news today that he said that the U.S. will own the Gaza Strip and we'll do a great job with it. We'll do a great job. I mean, you have to hope that this is some 4D negotiating shit, because otherwise, what the hell?
I got nothing. I have no clue. I mean, but the ones, watch what he does, not what he says.
Right.
Right. And we wouldn't have anticipated this kind of gut out. I thought there would be icy blowback from the Biden laptop and all that kind of stuff, which is all other stuff that's all sitting in the background. Then I'm sure in Trump's mind when it comes to these questions of when they say, hey, USAID is a CIA cutout and they're doing all this trans shit. Do you want to get rid of them? And he's like, well, get rid of them.
Yep.
I get that.
And also when they funded prosecutors that, you know, yeah, drag yeah. your ass through the courts for 4 years.
Yes. All of those things. When you look at the removal of security clearances from all that media cycle, which you didn't really cover because it's like so freaking obvious that, mm-hmm. you know, it wasn't worth covering. When you look at all those things, you could understand why Donald Trump would have an agenda to pursue there. But to actually literally shut down the National Endowment for Democracy as an actual chopping block item, I got this tweet from Elon Musk here. You know, that's pretty big deal. That's a pretty big deal. Like, that's way more than I anticipated. So, like, as much as, you know, I have my quibbles and, you know, I'm not a loyalist or anything like that. God damn it. That's a huge win. Yeah. And I don't see at like a point of libertarian to a cabinet. They're going to get rid of one of the most important functions of the intelligence community's power projection overseas for the global empire. That's a big deal.
Yeah.
But will they stop? No, they're not going to stop. They're going to continue. But.
Yeah,
it's a goddamn good thing.
For the non-libertarians in the room, I just want to add this fun little piece too. Speaking of libertarians in the cabinet, Angela McArdle resigned from the seat of chair of yeah. the LNC, and on her way out, gave Donald Trump an honorary lifetime membership to the Libertarian Party, making him
the first libertarian,
the libertarian in his own cabinet. Come on, I got to reference that because that is the base troll award of the year. That, right there.
Pretty funny.
And obviously just pissing off all the other libertarians in the party who have seemingly kind of taken back control with the new leadership. So
interesting.
We'll see how that plays out. Anyways, I think it's been a great episode, David.
That was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Intimate.
Quite.
Intimate.
Yes. Yes. Steamy. In fact.
I'm hat.
Yeah, you got that hat on.
It's very warm in here.
Yeah, well, maybe you should shave your head and not wear a hat next time.
That's good, Paul.
Okay. Yeah. I'll do that. Thank you guys for tuning in to our Tuesday episode of Human Reaction. For David Rand and nobody else, I'm Jeff Sheehan. We'll see you guys in the next one.
Peace.
Thanks for tuning in to Human Reaction. Please be sure to like, follow, subscribe, and give us a review on your podcast platform of choice. And if you want to become a member and support the show financially, check out humanreactionpod.com. And remember,
because
declassify me harder, Dad.
Yeah.